حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ألف لام ميم، أحسب الناس أن يتركوا أن يقولوا آمنا وهم لا يفتنون. صلوات على محمد وعلى آله.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
الله سبحانه وتعالى says in Surah Ankabut, in the ayah that we have been hearing every day. At the beginning of the chapter, he tells something to make every mu'min understand and everyone who claims to have iman understand. That does man think that they can say, I believe, and get away with it? Do you really think that you can say that you're a Muslim and Allah is not going to test you and let you get away with saying it? No, you will be tried. You will be tried by Allah. Allah is going to put you through trials. He's going to put you through hardships. He's going to put you through sufferings. And Allah wants to see in this trials who is going to be faithful, truthful to their claim, and who is lying and are not truthful in their claim. He wants to see those who are struggling and patient, as opposed to those who are impatient. And they escape these trials and they do wrong. So Allah is making it clear that they are, the reason why He's testing us, the reason why He's putting us through fitna is to see who is a real mu'min and who is a fake mu'min. So Allah has already declared beforehand that not all the mu'mineen are real. Not all the believers are true. There are those who are real and there are those who are fake. And the only way to know that is when Allah tests them and sees who is going to pass in those tests. Then it will be known whether your claim to be a Muslim, your claim to have accepted Allah as your creator is real or not. Otherwise, until then, it is just a claim. And then to understand if we want to pass these trials, then we must know the reasons why Allah is trying us. If we don't know the reason, then we will be in a situation that we don't know how to even give the exam, how to even give the test. And hence we went through the reasons. The first reasons why difficulties come in our lives is because of our own sins. Making fun of believers. Disrespecting one's parents. Dishonoring the blessings of Allah. And there's a list of sins that if you do those sins, then Allah will make your life miserable in this dunya. Then after that, we went to the reasons why Allah gives us difficulties in this life. And then we explained that the first reason after the sins is that Allah wants to protect believers from greater harms, from impeding danger that is coming their way, by putting them through small trials. It is better for a mu'min to go through the trials that Allah gives them here than to face the greater trials and the greater calamities that will befall them. And hence Allah protects them. Or Allah gives hardships in order, or He takes something from believers in order to give them something better. And then we went to the third reason, and that is that Allah does not reward believers for their actions in this dunya. The good deeds they do, the prayers, the fastings they make, Allah does not reward them in this dunya because there's nothing of value in this dunya that can be a payment for the worship of Allah. In this dunya, there's nothing that's of value, that is worth, that Allah can give you in exchange for your worship, for your ibadah, for your good deeds. And hence He has kept those rewards for them in the akhirah, in the hereafter, in heaven, where He can really give you the rewards for your good actions. And hence when believers know this, they know that if we are doing actions for Allah, we are not expecting anything in return in this dunya. We're not expecting anything that Allah is going to give here in this dunya. No, Allah is going to give it to us there. And that is what we are hoping for. That is what we have certainty in. Then we discuss the last reason why Allah tests believers. And when we look at it, we see that Allah wants to prepare believers for a responsibility He has given them. And that responsibility is preparing the grounds for the reappearance of Imam Mahdi ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. The task of preparing the grounds for the Imam's reappearance is in the hands of believers, you and me. Allah has given us that task. He has given us that responsibility. And hence, Allah is putting us through tests so that we can get ready for it. We can actually do it. We can be improved. And that's why Allah makes us go through these tests. And the tests of Akhir al-Zaman, or the last days of man before the reappearance of the Imam, are going to be the toughest tests and the toughest trials that man has ever faced. What are the signs of the hereafter, or of the last days of man? One of the signs of the last days of man is that there is going to be a lot of confusion. There will be so much confusion that people are going to be confused to even find out where the truth is, where Islam is. And Shaitan also, my friends, is not someone who knew how to misguide people right from the start. He made a promise to Allah that I'm going to misguide them. I'm going to stand on Sirat-i-Mustaqim. But the problem with Shaitan is that he wasn't an expert at it. You know, he learned through his trials and errors. He went through his learning process of what is the best way to misguide people. How you misguide people. I mean, you know, the ilm that Anbiya have is from Allah, and that is absolute knowledge. Allah knows what's going to happen, how things are done. Shaitan doesn't know that. He is learning. And as he learned, he became better. And as he became better, now he knew what is the best way to fool people. You know, you try new tricks, you see what works, what doesn't work. And hence, you improve on that. And we saw that, and Allah explained that in the Quran, in the different stages of man's growth. When you saw the different stages of man's growth, you saw how Shaitan improved his attacks and assaults on man. So now when you saw these different ways he attacks, at first, you know, he came and said that, listen, there is no God. People believe that. And I'm just going to take you briefly through history so we can come to our point that we are living in right now and how Shaitan is deceiving believers right now. You see, in the time of the early prophets, Adam to Nuh, you see that Shaitan put in the minds of people that there is no God. And hence, you see Prophet Nuh just preaching the message that there is a God. And when Prophet Nuh and the earlier prophets, they preached to the people, when people believed in God, now Shaitan couldn't come and say that, okay, you know what? If he told the people after the prophets proved that there is a God, he couldn't tell them that there is no God. So when the people started believing in God, so he said, listen, the sun is your God. People believed in God, but he said, okay, who's your God? Well, you know, there is a God. You know, our prophets and messengers who came there, they have established the proofs of God. So now the issue was, okay, I can't go now and try to undermine what the prophets have done, because now it's an established fact in the hearts and minds of people. So he came and said, all right, where is God? He said, the moon is God, the sun is God. And you see, when the time came for Ibrahim, he was not saying to believe in God. People believed in God, no matter how weird their belief was. You see, if they didn't believe in God, why did they worship the idols? Why did they worship the sun? Why did they worship the moon? The reason the moon was worshipped, because they believed there's a God. It's just that they didn't know who he was. Ibrahim came and said that, listen, he didn't have to argue that there is a God. That fact was established. Now you see, he came forward and said, listen, the moon, is this God? And then after that, when they said yes, then when the moon went down, he said, but God doesn't go down. God doesn't disappear. He proved the moon, that moon is not God. The sun is not God. And hence, that's the reason why Ibrahim, in his time, the ideology of Tawheed was established. You see, before him, the ideology of the existence of God and the wujud of Allah was established. But the idea of Tawheed, that there is one God, really was established in the hearts and minds of people after Ibrahim. And when it came to the time, then after that, you know, Shaitan said, all right, you believe in God. It's not the moon, it's not the sun. So, you see, if you believe in God, then you must see him. You must see him. He should be there somewhere. You should see him. And hence, now, the doubt was in the attributes of Allah. And that was now in the time of Musa. When Musa came, he established the fact that, listen, God cannot be seen. It was the people with Musa who came and said that, listen, we want to see God. And until we don't see God, we will not believe in him. لَن نُؤْمِنُ حَتَّى نَرَى اللَّهُ جَهْرَةً. We will not believe in God until we see him with our own eyes. Musa said, all right, come. He took them there. He asked Allah. Allah obviously just revealed his power. And it was so amazing and so magnificent that Allah said that the mountain crumbled, Musa fainted, and what happened to the people who went with him is not worth mentioning. He didn't even mention that. He said that the mountain crumbled, Musa fainted, and the people were there, but Allah didn't even mention about them. What happened to them is not even worth mentioning. So the idea that God cannot be seen and the attributes of God were established in the time of Musa. You see, Tawheed was completed. Tawheed was conveyed. That's why Bani Israel believed that there is one God, he cannot be seen. They believed that. And then after that, the issue was that, okay, we believe in God. But what about the message of God? The messengers of God? You see, that was slowly established until the Prophet came. He established that fact and hence it went on. And I'm explaining these things to you, that it was established then. Shaitan was trying to misguide people in the every appropriate way he can. And this confusion was in their own time, in the ideology that they had. Now as we came to this point, in Akhirat Zaman, it is said that there will be so much confusion that the people won't know where is right and where is wrong. Because the reason is that both Haq and Batil will be represented by people who wear the dress of Haq, who wear the dress of truth. Now Batil doesn't come to you in a suit and tie. Now Batil came into religion in the form of Amama and Aba. Now you hear two sides of the story. One group saying this is Haq and this is Islam, and the other saying this is Haq and this is Islam. Now believers are caught in between different views even amongst their own ulama that they respect. It's there. The confusion is there. Now who do we believe? Because this side also recites ayat of the Quran, the other side also recites the ayat of the Quran. This side speak of hadith, the other side also speaks of hadith. And all of these things are being said. When all these things are being said and all this confusion is there, really this is the reason why so many hadiths are there that is telling us there will be so much confusion that people won't know where to turn. They go with one and the other saying, don't go there. This. They come over here. And everyone is saying that. So now what do we do in this situation? How do we know where the truth is? My friends, this is where we see in this fitna that we are living in, how do we know where the truth is in fitna? When the fitna is not there, everyone, it's easy to find out. If there was only one flag of Islam, it was easy to find out. But when there are two, three, four, five flags of Islam standing up, now is the problem. How do we know which of these Islam is Islam of Ahlul Bayt? Which of these Islam is Islam of Imam Ali? Which of this Islam is Islam of Imam Hassan? Which of these Islam is Islam of Imam Hussein? This is where the problem is, my friends. Now, how do we find out? Again, I go back to the beginning of Islam and what I mentioned yesterday. What did the Prophet say, my friends? Understand this. And I'm just trying to conclude the point from yesterday. And inshallah, we'll go into the point that I have to speak about today, as I promised. What did the Prophet speak about? Let me tell you if you send me a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
When he brought Islam to the people, a simple statement was made. He says, this is the basis of Islam, the foundation of Islam, this is the criteria. He said, قُولُوا لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهِ تُفْلِهُ. Say, لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهِ and you will be successful. And that was the basis that was given, that has always been the foundation of Islam, and will always be the foundation of Islam. And as I explained yesterday, La ilaha illallah has two parts to it. La ilaha means rejecting all zulm, rejecting all evil, rejecting all false gods, rejecting all false powers. Illallah means accepting justice, accepting Allah, accepting His deen, accepting His service. Two things. So now my friends, here's what happens. As I said yesterday, shirk, kufr, nifaq, All these things that are there. The oppressors, zalimin, those who are kuffar, those who are mushrik, they were never against Allah. And they're still not against Allah. They're still not against Allah. You can, if you have Allah, they'll say, you know, good. You pray, you fast, you do matam and latmiya, you cry for Him, go ahead, do that. No one minds. They're all saying, do it, doesn't matter. No one has a problem with Allah, but kufr and shirk and mushrik and all these zalimeen, they never had a problem with Allah. The problem they had was with la ilah. The problem they had was with la ilah. He said, do not say bad to our gods. Do not say bad to our religion. Do not say bad to our power. Do not say bad to our way of life. You have your way of life. We'll have our way of life and we'll do our things. We will say we are the power. You say whatever you want. And we will also accept Allah. But don't say la ilah. But Allah has made it clear that Allah cannot be established until la ilah is established. You cannot be a Muslim until you say la ilah to the zalimeen. You cannot be a Muslim until you say la ilah to every false power and anyone who claims to have power other than Allah. You have to say la ilah in order to establish Allah. If you just say Allah and say I'm a Muslim, well, how do I become a Muslim? Say Allah. Say Allah that ashadu anna Allah khaliq. No, you're not a Muslim yet. You're not a Muslim yet. Islam, when you want to accept Islam, first you must reject every other god, every other power, every other notion, every other ideology, every other idea before you accept Allah. Allah doesn't want any one of you. He doesn't want anyone who's going to come and say, Allah, I have you and I have this also. No, you come to me with a clean slate. Reject every other thing, then come here. So the problem that happens is this, my friend. When the confusion is there, and everyone is saying Allah, then obviously, you know, the issue that happens is that everyone, they say, we are mu'min, we are muttaqi, we are good, we are this. And there's no way to prove they have taqwa or not. How are you going to do that? You know, they say, we have faith in Allah. We are sincere and we love Allah. We love the Imams. Now, love exists in your heart. Iman exists in your heart. I can't open your heart and see whether you're a mu'min or not. Right? That's what they say. You know, you don't know how much Iman we have. Alright, alhamdulillah, good. He says that we cannot know that. Everyone who says Allah, we don't know. It's just a claim. It's just a claim. When you say Allah, it's just a claim. My friends, this is the way you know the truth from falsehood. Not by those who say Allah. You know those who are truthful, not by those who establish Allah. You know the truthful when they establish La ilah before they establish Allah. Understand the difference. When you say La ilah, shaitan is angry at you. Zalimeen are angry at you. Oppressors are angry at you. You see, when you say La ilah, they're upset. So, the issue is, everyone claims that we love Allah, Allah loves us. But the only way to know, there's no way to know who Allah loves. Everyone claims that. You, me, everyone else. All the Muslims claim that. Allah loves us, we love Allah. So my friends, if you don't know the truth, if you don't know who Allah loves, the easiest way to find out the truth, the easiest way to find out where haq is, not by knowing who Allah loves, but by knowing who shaitan hates. If you don't know who Allah loves, don't worry. Just see who shaitan hates. If shaitan hates someone, then it means that he is going to be with Allah. This is how you know. Look at Shaitan and say, Shaitan cannot ever praise someone who loves Allah and who's sincere with Allah. But if Shaitan is praising someone, then he needs to be careful. He needs to be careful. You know, there was a teacher and a student. The student had a dream. Shaitan came in his dream. And when Shaitan came in his dream, he was very angry. So the student asked him, "What's wrong with you? Why are you angry?" He said, "I hate your teacher. I hate your teacher." He said, "Why?" "Because every time I plan to do some misguidance, he always comes there and he's wise enough to know my plans and he does something that would break my plans. I can never get to him. Every time I try to misguide him, he's always strong. That's why I hate him. I despise him." And he was so emotional that the student was a bit afraid. He says, "All right, but what about me?" He tapped the shoulder and said, "You're a good boy." My friends, the way to know the truth is not by looking at who Allah loves, because that is something that will be known in the hereafter. That will be known in the Akhirah. The way to know the truth is who Shaitan hates. Anywhere Shaitan or his agents, whenever they see a mu'min, they are going to hate him. They are going to despise him. They will never be with a mu'min. And if there is a mu'min being praised by Shaitan, then be aware that his iman is in doubt. His Islam is in doubt. His Islam is mistaken. Because Shaitan cannot ever do that, my friends. This is the reason why we see that when the whole of Ahlul Bayt, when you look at their lives, then you will understand it so clearly. Such good people, such nice people who never did anything wrong to anyone. Why were they killed? Why were there was so much opposition to them? Why were they persecuted when they never did wrong to anyone? If they were such nice people and always nice to everyone and smiling to everyone and giving and generous, then why are they being persecuted for? Why are they being killed for? Why are these people hating them? Brothers, it's because they were not just being nice. They were saying La ilaha to them, and they are saying that we are standing up against oppression. When they stood up against the oppressors, you see, my friend, understand this. The Imams were never nice to oppressors. They were nice to humble people, to other people. But when the arrogance came in front of them, they also stood against that arrogance. Because when the arrogant powers come, when Shaitan comes, he wants you to bow before him. You speak to me with your head down. That's how you speak to me. And when you raise your head and talk to him eye to eye, that's when he says, "Who is this upstart who's standing up in front of my power, my arrogance?" You see, that is what bothers them. You stand up to them, then that's going to bother them. And then their whole idea is, "I'm going to make an example out of them. I'm going to make an example out of them. That's why I'll persecute them so much and I'll do so much zulm on them that they will break." And that's where you see that those who are mu'min, and when you look at the Imams, they have shown us that, listen, the way you expose the zalim is you stand up in front of them and let them do zulm on you. When they do zulm on you, then their weakness is exposed and your strength is exposed. Your strength is exposed. My friends, understand this. Let me give you an example so you understand. If I close my hands very tight and I ask you, "Okay, open it. There's something that you want that's in my hand. And you want to get it." You know, we are mu'min, we have faith. If I have something in my hand that you want, so you try to open it as much as you can. You put all your strength to open it. If you cannot open it, then you see you take a gun and shoot me. By shooting me, all you have proven is that you didn't have the power to break me. You didn't have the power to break me. So you went and shot me. You went and did zulm on me. By doing zulm, he is proving that he was powerless to break you. He was powerless to break you. Your strength of your iman is when you stand up, and when zalim tries to do zulm to you, you stand up against it in such a way that they cannot break you. They can kill you, but they cannot break your iman. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
This, my friends, is the way that you know where is haq in the time of fitna. See who's saying la ilaha. Who is saying la ilaha? Who is establishing la ilaha? Who is shaitan against? Who are the agents of shaitan against? And when you know that, then you know that yes, this person is on the truth. This person is holding the right flag of Islam. Because shaitan can never like the flag of Islam. He's not going to love the flag of Islam. He's going to hate it. So if he's praising someone, beware of him. If he is giving awards to someone, be aware of him. Right? If he is giving prizes to someone, be aware of him. Because a mu'min, our anbiya and our imams have made it clear that if we work, we only work to get ajr from Allah. My friends, you all answer this for yourself. Do you want ajr from Allah or from shaitan? Just make it yourself. Understand yourself. You want ajr from Allah. If shaitan tries to give you ajr, if you are a mu'min, then you would look at yourself and say, you know what? There is something wrong with me. There is something wrong with me. Why is shaitan giving me reward? Why is he giving me a prize? Because I am against him. I oppose him. I oppose shaitan. I oppose zalimeen. If I oppose zalimeen, why are they giving me a reward? See, if they give reward to us, my friends, I'm making it very clear. To us, it's very clear now, through the teachings of Allah and Ahlul Bayt, we have understood, if shaitan gives someone a reward, then his Islam can never be right. His Islam can never be right. His Islam is not the Islam of Ahlul Bayt. Because Yazid never gave a reward to Imam Hussein. Muawiyah never gave a reward to Imam Ali or Imam Hassan. No one gave a reward to anyone. They always hated them and they always despised them. This is the reason why we have to be very strong, my friends, to know what is right and wrong in these times of fitna. And Allah is preparing us for that. Why? Because when the Imam will come, it will be very difficult for people to be with the Imam. Very difficult. That's the reason he says, get ready. And I promised yesterday, 10 things we have to give importance to. Those 10 things I will mention, so that you can hear it and know it. What are those 10 things? Since I don't have time, I've already gone a lot, so inshallah I'm going to do it in brief. Send me a salawat. Imam Jafar al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wassalam. He had said that the last person to come and meet Rasulullah on his deathbed, last person who came and met Rasulullah before the angel of death came to take his ruh, the last person who met him was Jibreel. When Jibreel came to meet the Prophet, so the Prophet saying salam to him, he said, Jibreel, they greeted each other. And then Prophet said, well, Jibreel, your work is done. Jibreel, his creation, was to bring the message of Allah to the prophets. Give them the message. So the message was completed at the time of our prophet. So obviously, from that time onwards, he's retired. He is retired. You know? And Allah has rewarded him for whatever he has done and all the work he has done. So Rasulullah said, so now Jibreel, you're not coming back anymore. There's no more message that is going to come back to the earth. So as I leave, so this is your last visit to the earth. He said, Ya Rasulullah, I'm going to come back 10 more times. I'm going to come back 10 more times to earth. After you die, I'll be back here. So Rasulullah said, for what? Why are you coming back? Why are you coming back? This. So now Jibreel mentioned 10 things that he's going to come back and take away. He's going to take away 10 things. And understand those 10 things. And then I'll explain to you why we need to give importance to those 10 things. If we want to be a true mu'min. My friends, the first thing Jibreel said, the first time I come to visit the earth, I'm going to take back truthfulness from muttaqi and pious people. Those who are muttaqi and pious, I'm going to take back truthfulness from them. Those who are muttaqi, you will see that they will cease to be truthful and they will cease to be honest. And I'm taking that back from them. This is the first thing. The second thing is I'm going to take, the second time I come, I'm taking adl from the rulers. Muttaqi people will cease being honest and truthful. Rulers are going to stop being just and adil. And understand this. He's going to take back adil. There won't be any more adil rulers. If you see rulers not being adil, it's because Jibreel has taken it away. If you see muttaqi people being dishonest, it means that Jibreel has taken that away. And just for you all to know, who are the first rank of rulers in Islam? Who are the first rank of rulers where you see justice and you learn justice and where justice is established? Friends, the first rank of rulers in Islam are the fathers of the household. Those who are father, they are the ones who must be just, the head of the household. They are the ones who are the first rulers of Islam, meaning that they have their domain, they have their home, and there they need to establish justice. When you see parents being unjust to their children, when you see fathers being unjust to their families, when the rulers of Islam, who are the wali in their homes, when they stop being just, that's when you see Jibreel has made a visit to the earth. He has made his second visit. My friends, imagine this. Justice is very important and it starts from the home. It starts in establishing it in home first. That's where children learn to grow just. When you have more than one children, you will see it is imminent that when you have more than one children, to be just between them. The Prophet and the Imams have cursed that father who give more attention to one son over the other. Because when you do that, that's where injustice creeps into the hearts and souls of the children. Both of them become unjust. One becomes unjust because he was unfairly treated better, and the other becomes unjust because he was unfairly treated poorer. Both of them become unjust. And that's why justice, if you want to establish it, starts at home. When we respect justice in home, then we would want justice in our society. But we don't have justice in our home. Why would we want it in the society for? If the children who grew up in an unjust environment in their own homes, why do you think that they would want it outside? Because they can get things through injustice. Inshallah, I don't have time to explain this more. But this is an important aspect of our life. And that's where you see, if we lose that justice, it means Jibreel has come and taken it away. Now the third thing he said, the third time when I come back, Ya Rasulullah, when I come back the third time, I am going to take away haya from the woman. Haya, what we call honor and shame. You know, there's a whole hadith that says that 9/10 of haya is in women, ladies. He said that when you see that ladies and women are going to become shameless and are start to expose themselves in front of others, then it means that, and this is, here he's talking about mu'mineen now, not kuffar. Not kuffar. Lives are like animals, you know, whatever it is. We're talking about mu'mineen and believers who believe in Allah and fear Allah. Them. When you see that mu'min ladies, those who claim to have Islam and be Muslims and mu'min, when they began exposing themselves, then it means that Jibreel has made his third visit and has taken away haya from them. He has taken their haya and shame from them. And the fourth thing he said, when I come back, when the woman lose their haya, the fourth visit I'll make, is that I will take ghairat away from the men. Haya and ghairat are two different things. They are two different things. Ghairat is a sort of jealousy, envy, honor. He said that when you see the men of my ummah and the men amongst the believers, when the women lose their haya and start exposing themselves, when you see the men being alright with it, when the men are being okay with it, then it means that Jibreel has made his fourth visit and has taken away their ghairat and their honor. This is my fourth visit I'm making. Then he says, Ya Rasulullah, when I come back the fifth time, then I'm going to take charity away from the rich people. Rich people will stop being charitable. Amongst your mu'mineen, they will stop being charitable. And they won't be. Right? You go to them, you will see that they will not give. They will not be helpful. And you know, the reasons behind it, you know, I don't have time to explain this because of the time factor. I'm just explaining this to you, inshallah. You do your own research in this. And I'm just going through the list. This is the fifth visit. When he comes there, he's going to take the emotion of charity from the rich people. Allah has given, you know, my friends, understand this. Allah, when he gives, because the sixth thing I'll mention also, so you understand it together, because both of them are related. He'll take charity from the rich people, and the sixth visit he'll make, he said, I'm going to take patience from the poor people. Those who are poor, I'll take away patience from them. They will be impatient. Allah has made a relationship. The reason he made some rich and some poor is not because he likes some and dislikes the other. The reason he makes rich and poor is so that there could be an emotional attachment between the society, in the society. Those who are rich, when they see the poor, their hearts will have compassion for the poor and they will help and they will give in the way of Allah, in the way of these poor people and help them. And the poor at the same time, when they are poor, they will be patient and not do anything haram. But you see, when they start losing their patience and said, listen, I need food on the table even if I have to do haram for it, then it means they lost their patience. They lost their patience. This is the reason why you see all these major events happen. And sometimes it takes that. Allah wanted, this is right, in Ramadan, the whole wisdom of Ramadan is what? So that when everyone fasts, the rich people who are fasting, who eat a lot, when they go through hunger, then they will feel the hunger that those who don't have food can feel, they feel every day. So when they feel that hunger, there could be compassion in the society. There could be compassion in the society. But once you see that compassion lost, once you see the emotion of charity lost, and no matter how hard the things that happen, you see, they see poor people. They see people who are hungry. They see people who can't pay their bills, but they still don't care about them. They still don't care about them. This is why Allah has to now do a major operation and a major surgery. Once in a while He does that. He sends a tsunami or an earthquake and becomes so bad that now those who are rich, when they see the hardship of people who are going through it, at least they feel the compassion to come forward and help. And it's unfortunate that man has become so low that it takes a tragedy to make them compassionate. Right? This is what happens. And Allah is making it clear that Jibreel is letting us know that if He has come down and taken compassion and that emotion of charity from rich people, then He has made His fifth visit. If He has taken patience from the poor, He has made His sixth visit. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
Then he said that now I'm going to come back the seventh time, Ya Rasulullah. I'm coming back the seventh time and I'm going to now take away compassion from this dunya. I'm going to take it away. People will cease to be compassionate towards one another because I'm taking it away. And the eighth thing is that I'm going to take away mercy and rahmah from this dunya. And you see, now it doesn't mean that Allah's rahmat is not existing. It means the reasons that rahmat of Allah comes down, those reasons will be taken away. Those reasons will be taken away. I told you, one of those reasons that Allah sends mercy on people is that they honor their parents and not disrespect them. Once they start disrespecting their parents, then you see Allah cuts off His mercy from that person. He cuts off that mercy from that person. And hence the reasons why Allah's mercy descends more and increasingly, this is the reason you see that it comes down. And He says that if I take it away, when you see that it doesn't exist, then you know what? It's over. That it's not here anymore. Jibreel has taken it away. Now we come back to the ninth thing. We come to the ninth thing. And the ninth thing that He said, that when I come for the ninth visit, this is the end now. He's taking one by one. He said, this is the end. The ninth thing that He's going to take, He said, I'm going to come back the ninth thing, and I'm going to take knowledge and ilm from ulama. Now you will see people who look like alims, but they're not. You'll see people who have, you know, who will look like, wow, looks like an Ayatollah. But he's not. When ulama cease to have knowledge, and knowledge in the real sense of the word, my friends, is not books that we have read, but knowledge in the sense that that which brings you closer to Allah and makes you fear Allah and nothing else. This is that which is called knowledge. When you see people being afraid of the zalim and not speaking and not saying anything, then you know that knowledge is lost. When you see people who are afraid of other things than Allah, then you see that he has no knowledge. Because if he had knowledge, then he would know that he should only fear Allah and no one else. He should fear Allah and no one else. And he says, ninth visit is, I'm going to take ilm from the ulama. And the last thing he said, when I come back, then I'm going to take iman from the believers. I'm going to take iman from the believers. Now you see, believers will be there, but they will have no iman. You'll have no iman. Let me explain to you, my friends, something here that could be, you know, and I have seen it happen, that some misunderstanding, that we need to make it clear. Some smart alecks, you know, you always have them in every community, you know, some, you know, people who think they are smarter than others, you know, they'll come forward and say, Mawlana, you know, alhamdulillah, you mentioned a hadith, you know, now we know why we don't have iman. Jibreel took it away. It's his fault. You know, there'll be those people who come there and say that. Well, Jibreel took it away. Well, that's why we are like this. If Jibreel didn't take it, alhamdulillah, we would be mu'min also. But Jibreel took away the iman. You see, now let me explain to you how this hadith applies in our life. And all these 10 things, my friends, I'm mentioning these are the things of Akhirah Zaman. That if we pay attention to these things, my friends, understand this. If we pay attention to these things and give importance to these things, you will see that no one can be an obstacle in the mission of Islam. If women have haya, if men have ghairat, no one in the society can stand up and try to dishonor Islam. No one can do that. If we understood the reasons of rahmah, there's no way that no one can come and hurt us and harm us. If ulama had knowledge and mu'mineen had iman, then we wouldn't have a shortage of leaders or those who strive in Allah's way. Now, why did Jibreel take it away? That is the question. And right now, let me answer that to you, and if you can help me out and just move up front this way, inshallah, and because in the back there's a lot of rush there, and we have room over here. Salawat. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
My friends, understand this. Why did Jibreel take this away? I mean, you know, if he took it away, right, then those people who say that, hey, listen, our iman is weak because Jibreel took it away. And if the ulama say our ilm is weak because Jibreel took it away, wait a minute. Why did Jibreel take it away? My friends, understand this. Let me give an example. If you're walking by your Muslim neighbor's house or any neighbor's house, you know, and let's say, you know, that you peeped into his trash can. I don't know why would you do that, but just say you still have a habit of doing it. And lo and behold, what you see in the trash can is that he has thrown away a copy of the Quran. It's in the trash can. You see it in the trash can. Right? And obviously, if you see the Quran in the trash can, what would you do? He has thrown it away. It's in the garbage. You see, the Quran is in the garbage. No one knows who your neighbor is. Maybe someone gave him the Quran and he threw it away. He didn't want it. He's non-Muslim. Whatever it is. He threw it in the garbage. If you see it in the garbage, if you see it in the trash can, what are you going to do? Are you going to leave it there and say, forget about it? And if you honor the Quran, what will you do? You know, to you it's honorable. To him, it has no meaning. It has no meaning. That's why he threw it away. To you it's honorable. You respect it. You honor it. If he has thrown away, so you will also take it out of the garbage can and take it home. Right? You will also take it out of the garbage can and take it home. Why? Because he has thrown it in the garbage. He doesn't need it. He threw it away. It's in the garbage now. And you saw it there and you took it away. My friends, this is the reason why Jibreel is going to take away these things. Because when people, when they will throw these things away in the garbage, when you throw away honesty, when it becomes so worthless to you that you throw it away, when you throw away knowledge, it has become so worthless you threw it away, When you threw away your iman, it has become so worthless, you threw it away. Then Jibreel is going to come and pick it up and take it away. Why? Because you have thrown it away. It has become so worthless in the eyes of believers. These things will become so worthless in the eyes of believers that they will throw these things away. Iman, what is iman here? Throw it away. It's not even worth it. And how do you know that it's not being worth it? You see, when you start sacrificing these things for dunya, then you know that it has become so worthless that it is worth less than what this dunya is. You see, honesty, my friend, just one example I'll give and you can apply it to the rest of them. Honesty. By being honest, you see, you're losing business. By being honest, you're losing business. A guy, you know, who sells, for example, refurbished laptops. You know, it's business. You know, now, he told me this. He said, Maulana, listen, if I say the truth, you know, when he listened on eBay, now the issue that happened is that, what's he going to say about this? I changed this, I changed that, and it's broken up, and whatever. Either I be honest with it, or I say, you know, brand new out of the box. If I say brand new out of the box, I'll get more bids. Right? The issue is that if dunya, just for a few dollars more, right, he's ready to sell his honesty. It means that honesty has become so worthless in his eyes that it is less than a few dollars. Yeah, he has thrown it away. He has thrown it away for dunya. Right? This is, my friend, this is the way that we make things worthless in our hearts and our eyes. How we make things worthless. And when these things become worthless for us, then you know there's going to be taken away. Jibreel, that's why he's coming to take it. Because we have thrown it, when Mu'mineen will throw it in the garbage. Then Jibreel will come and take it. They say, they don't want it, you take it. And you know what? When we see the Quran being disrespected, just as a matter of rule of Islam, let me explain this. When you see the Quran being disrespected, dishonored, then even if you have to spend money to buy it, then you should spend money in order to protect the respect of the Quran. And this goes with anything sacred. If you see the turba of Imam Hussein being disrespected by someone, then you should spend money to buy it so that that disrespect will stop. You have to spend. Allah says, sacrifice your dunya for the things that have been made sacred. And if we start sacrificing those things that are sacred for dunya, then we have thrown it in the garbage. My friends, this is the reason that if you want to be a mu'min in this time, then these are the 10 things to give importance to. 10 things to give importance to. And then you will see that your outlook and our ideology will change in life. And then we will see truly, where is Allah's truth? Mu'mineen will make things worthless. These things so worthless that they will sacrifice those things for dunya. And this is why you see that Imam Hussein and Ahlul Bayt, they are making it clear. You might disregard these things. You might disregard Islam, you might dishonor Islam, you might think Islam is so worthless that it could be thrown away in the garbage. But Ahlul Bayt have shown that do not think that Islam has no protectors, that Islam will be left as an orphan. And this is the lesson that Imam Hussein has taught us. That no matter, you might think it's worthless. You might think Islam is worthless and Iman is worthless. But how can I think that it's worthless? I cannot. Because I was raised on the same chest that Islam was raised on. I was raised in the same lap where Islam was raised. I was kissed by the same person who has blessed Islam. And this is the reason why you see that Imam Hussein knew that if Islam is being dishonored, that he is going to come forward and save it. He's going to protect it. But Hussein, you will have to pay a price for it. Islam has said that even if you have to pay a price for it, if you see the Quran being dishonored, pay the price for it. Buy it. So that when it's in your hands, now you give it the respect that it deserves. And the price for Islam is a very high price. The price of saving Islam is a very high price. Imam Hussein, you will have to pay a big price for it. And Imam Hussein is saying, I'm ready to pay any price to save the religion of Allah and to save Islam from being dishonored. Imam Hussein, you will have to give Qasim. Are you ready to do that? Imam Hussein said, yes, I'm ready to give Qasim. Imam Hussein, Mawla, you will have to sacrifice Ali Akbar. Are you ready to see him in pain? Are you ready to see him in pain in front of you? Imam Hussein said, yes, I'm ready to see Ali Akbar in pain in front of me. Mawla, you will also have to sacrifice Ali Asghar. Are you ready to do that? Imam Hussein said, yes. Anything, anyone, if I have to pay everything, if I have to give everything that I own, and I have to give everything that I love, I will give it so that Islam can be saved. So that Islam can be saved. Imagine, my friends, the love that Imam Hussein has for Islam. How much he loves Islam and how much he loves the deen of Allah, that he is sacrificing the things that he loves the most for Allah's deen. This shows that Imam Hussein loves Islam. And if someone is going to dishonor Islam, what is his relationship with Imam Hussein? Why would he have a relationship with Imam Hussein? You can claim to love Imam Hussein all you want, but if you're not going to sacrifice yourself to save Islam, then Imam Hussein is not looking at you as someone that he wants. Imam Hussein is not looking at you as someone what he wants. Mawla, you have to give sacrifices, and you have given sacrifices. Imam Hussein is saying, I will give sacrifices, even if I have to, even I know that after me, my tents are going to be burned, but it's all right with me. I know that my ladies are going to be paid prisoners, but it's all right with me. We will go through that. Zainab is saying, I will go through that. I will make that sacrifice for Islam. Hussein gave his life. Hussein gave his life. Oh my friend, Hussein gave his life in Karbala. Zainab gave up her honor through Kufa and Sham. My friends, understand this. Understand, and I'll just give you an example of what Hussein is and who Zainab is. What he gave and what Zainab gave. You know, when we want to slaughter an animal, then there's a way of slaughtering it. We cut the neck of the animal and it's slaughtered. But the way to slaughter a fish is to take it out of water and the fish dies by itself. It dies by itself. Animals are slaughtered by the knife. The fish is slaughtered by taking it out of water. My friends, this is how you do zabiha. You do zabiha and slaughtering of an animal by cutting its neck. You do zabiha of a fish by taking it out of water. My friends, two zabiha were done. One was that of Imam Hussein. Hussein's zabiha was slaughtering his neck, and Zainab's zabiha was taking her out of hijab like a fish is taken out of water. Yeah.
When Zainab, when she was taken out of her hijab, now Zainab felt like a fish that is taken out of water. It cannot live. My salam be upon Zainab, who became slaughtered from Karbala to Kufa and Kufa to Sham. Zainab went through the trials, Zainab went through the fitna, but that was Zainab who went through the hardships. As I explained yesterday, when Yazid released the prisoners, and Zainab had gone through so much, humiliation and disgrace, Zainab had gone through so much persecution and tragedy that she has seen. And you know, after Yazid allowed them to go, then Zainab is the one who put the conditions in front. When those conditions were met and Zainab was leaving, the one thing that broke Zainab and that broke her so much was not that they went through Kufa and Sham. If the one thing that broke Zainab was not the prison of Sham that had no roof. They were sitting under the sun in the day and in the cold in the night. They would bear the weather and they would go through the hardship in the same clothes that they came from Karbala. They went into that hardship, but that did not break Zainab. The one thing that broke Zainab was when all the caravan, they were leaving Sham. When they were leaving Sham, then Zainab realized and she went back towards the prison and on the grave of Sakina and said, Sakina, I can bear anything, but Sakina, leaving you here in Sham, how can I bear that? How can I say to my brother Hussein that I left your amana and your trust in Sham? Zainab, leave Sakina, and the caravan moved towards Karbala. Zainab said, I will not go to Medina until I go to Karbala. I have not seen my brother. I want to go back to Karbala. My friends, today is the Arba'een of Hussein. My friends, today is the wish of Zainab being fulfilled. Zainab had made the wish that my brother, I will make Arba'een for you. I wasn't able to do anything for you. I couldn't cry for you. I couldn't remember any of your day. My brother, I am the one. I want to make Arba'een. This is my wish. This is the reason. Ashura, everyone does it. But Arba'een is the wish of Zainab. And the wish of Zainab will only be fulfilled by believers. Ziyarat-e-Arba'een, my brothers and sisters, is the sign of a mu'min. A sign of a mu'min is Ziyarat-e-Arba'een. And you see, we will read this ziyarat after the majlis. After the matam, we will read this ziyarat. And you will be a part of it. And you will be, this is one of those ziyarat that a sign of a believer is sitting there. But you know, Zainab had made that wish. Zainab wanted this and her dua. And Allah has answered his dua through you. My brothers, feel blessed that you are here to do the ziyarat of Arba'een. You are going to do the ziyarat of Arba'een. May you be blessed and may your families be blessed that you have answered the call of Allah and the dua of Zainab that she wanted to see the ziyarat. Now you see, when Arba'een, when they came towards Karbala, they came towards Karbala, there was no one there except for one person who Allah has blessed with the ziyarat of Arba'een, with the ziyarat of Imam Hussein. There's one person who was blessed, my friend. The first person who came for the ziyarat of Imam Hussein was Jabir ibn Abdullah al-Ansari. Jabir ibn Abdullah al-Ansari, who was a companion of Rasulullah, when he came to the grave of Imam Hussein, he came there with a servant. Jabir was an old man, and Hussein had played in his lap. Hussein had prayed in his lap. He has seen with his own eyes Rasulullah fondling Hussein and kissing the neck of Hussein. Yes, so that when Jabir came to the land of Karbala, he said to his servant, take me to the water. And he went there before he goes there. You see, what Jabir had done became the sunnah of all the Shias who go for ziyarat. First he went to the river, and when he approached the river, you see, he saw the coolness of the water. He touched the water, and he touched his hand on the water, and he said, so you are the water that all the animals are drinking from. But it was not given to Ahlul Bayt. It wasn't given to the children of Hussain. So you are that water that the children of Hussain, that Sakina lost her uncle for. You are that water. Oh, the water feels ashamed, my friends. The water feels ashamed that it has welcomed everyone to drink from it, except the children of Ahlul Bayt. Even the water cries today in Karbala. It has cried today in Karbala. That's why when it flows, it makes the tawaf of Abbas before it goes forward. It makes the tawaf of Abbas before. Jabir came forward, my friend. Jabir made ghusl. He made ghusl, and this is why you see that when we go to Karbala and we make the ziyarat of Imam Hussain, the first thing is to take ghusl for the ziyarat of Imam Hussain. When he took the ghusl, now he comes forward to the graves. He comes forward to the graves. In that time, there was no names on the graves, no stones on the graves, just a little signs that were there, that where the graves are. He came toward the grave of Imam Hussain. The servant said, how do you know this is the grave of Imam Hussain? Jabir said, I can feel the fragrance. I knew Hussain, I held him with my hands and smelled his fragrance. I know this is the grave of Hussain. He fell on the grave of Hussain and started to cry and mourn the death of Hussain. Jabir, when he was crying, and every gate he cried out. When Jabir was doing that, a person from Bani Asad came there. A person from Bani Asad was walking by, and Jabir was there. He was stupefied to find someone coming to the grave of these people. He came to Jabir and said, are you related to them? Are you related to these people? Jabir said, why do you ask that? Where are you from? He said, we are from Bani Asad and we live nearby. He said, that you know these people? You are the first one who has come here. These poor people have died and no one has come to visit them. Hussain and the family of Rasulullah is so gharib and so foreign and strange in the land of his ummah that no one came to visit Imam Hussain. He told Jabir that you are the first one I've seen who cries over these graves. No one comes here. And Jabir said, tell me, do you know what happened to them? Do you know what happened to them? My friend, this is the first Zakir of Hussain. The first Zakir of Hussain in Karbala was this man of Bani Asad, and the one who was listening was Jabir ibn Abdullah al-Ansari. He asked the person, do you know what happened there? Oh yes, I've seen it all happen. It happened in front of me, but I couldn't do anything. I was helpless. I was afraid. I couldn't come forward to help. I saw everything that happened. Jabir said, tell me what happened. Well, a group of people came here, and they were by the river, the tents were by the river, and then we saw on the second of Muharram that these people were by the river, they encamped over there. Then I saw that an army came from Sham, of soldiers from Kufa and Sham, a big army started coming, and they started coming, and on the fifth of Muharram, they moved their tents from the river, away from the river, and then from the seventh of Muharram, they banned water for them. And then what can I say? On the 10th of Muharram, then I saw that one by one, they were killed one by one. They were slaughtered. And I saw that when many of them were killed, I saw... Jabir is listening, tell me more. He said, I saw a person on the day of Ashura. I saw this one person who was going back and forth to the battlefield, bringing the dead from the field into the tent. And he's going back and forth. I was looking at him. He was so open. He had a bloody chin. And there was wisdom in his eyes. I was looking at them. And then I saw the same person that when he went out one time, a young man came out to fight. And when he went out in the battlefield, he fell to the ground. I saw this man again running over there. He couldn't walk. He was falling down. As he was going towards that young man, he was falling down, getting up, falling down and getting up. When he reached his body, he couldn't pick it up. He couldn't pick it up. His small children went there and helped him pick up the body of Ali Akbar. And then I saw someone going so brave and so courageous that he went through the army. And I was so looking at them. We saw him. He was so brave that no one would come near him. And he went to the river and he wants some water from the river. And he was going back towards the tent and no one would come near him. But these cowards were so, they came around him and behind him and they started hitting him. He lost his arm. He would not stop. He went forward. He wouldn't stop until the water bar was broken and the water fell to the ground. We saw him fall on the ground also. Jabir said, go on, tell me more what happened. Tell me more what happened. And Jabir was crying at every scene that he was depicting. He says, You want to listen? Are you able to bear? Are you able to bear what I am going to say to you? Jabir said, Tell me, what did you see? He said, I saw the same person who was bringing back the bodies. A time came when he went out and he showed a small baby in front of the army. He was doing something in front of them. I think he was asking for water. I couldn't hear him. But all I saw was that an arrow was shot in his way. And the arrow came and hit the neck of Ali Hazrat. My friend, but at this time, when Jabir was making the Ziyarat al-Hussein, he saw his servant said, someone is coming towards Karbala. Someone is coming towards us. He said, Who is it? They saw a dust rise from the far. And when the caravan came near, they went forward to see who these people are. When he went forward, Jabir ibn Abdullah al-Ansari met a young man. The man introduced himself, Jabir, he recognized the voice. He said, who are you? He said, I'm Ali ibn Hussein, a companion of my grandfather. That has made you come to the Ziyarat Hussein. He said, Mahla, I came to visit your father. He said, Jabir, go away from here. Jabir said, why, Mahla? Am I not your lover? Do I not love you? Yes, Jabir, we do. But you don't know. The Haram of Rasulullah is coming. Zainab and Umar Kulthum are coming. To the Darbayna Hussein. Go away. So you don't hear their voices. When the caravan came forward, Jabir left. When the caravan came forward and they came to the grave of Imam, they fell down on the grave. Zainab fell down on the grave. Everyone cried to the grave. They all cried. And then they came to the grave of Hussein. And then they said, we gave you everything we had. We went to Kupai Shop. We went everywhere, Hussain. We went everywhere, Hussain. We were taken as prisoners. And now, when all this time had said, now all the ladies got up. They all got up. And they remembered that there's one ziyarat they did not make. And they ran towards the river. The broken house of Fatima. They ran towards the river. They all fell on the grave of Abba. Abba, until you were alive. No one would dare look at us. But Abba, after you die, our hijab was taken off. Our hope, our hand was tied in ropes, Abba. Oh, the grave of Abba is shaking. Assalamu alaikum. Ya Abu Abdullah. Ala la ilaha illa qaum adh-dhalimin. سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون يا حسين
يا حسين يا حسين يا حسين